we're almost becoming normal again. I mean, new normal. I guess that's new normal. I think it's like, I don't like saying normal because it's like normal is like saying like it didn't happen and it happened.
Yeah.
You have to know that it happened. So
yeah, we're getting back to like we're gonna be able to be welcome to standby, everybody. By the way, everyone listening, and we're excited because eventually you and I will be in the same room again. We can feel.
Yes,
it.
I mean
it's coming, isn't it, buddy?
It's hopefully it's gonna be in a nice, cool studio. You know, we're working on that. So everybody, stay tuned with that. Yeah, because eventually we'll be doing our, you know, inviting the guests there, that live here. And then, and obviously if we get like guests that are traveling or in another city, we'll do it this way as well, but we're going to combine, you know.
But it's just going to be nice to not always have to worry about the delay.
Especially
like triangulating a conversation.
Sometimes it's like, you're like, is this, did they hear me? Or like, sometimes the connection works great. Sometimes with me, like it goes in and out, you know, like sometimes the connection is great one time and then it doesn't. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's and the first time that's coming back to normal is that I actually went to an actual movie. I went to Universal. They've opened up Universal Studios, like City Walk,
like in the City Walk. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I went and saw that horror movie, Chris Rock. I saw Chris Rock, one of my favorite.
Wait.
Performing.
Chris Rock was in a movie. Is in
Chris
a movie.
Rock,
I mean,
Chris
obviously, I know he's in a movie, but like which one?
Yeah, he's in the new, like, it's called Spiral, but it's like a Saw. It's like Saw. It's in the family.
Oh, got it. How was it? Good? Okay, that's it. Okay. All right, let's forget it. Let's talk about it. I want to talk about the experience of going to the movie.
You get what you want. Okay, let's just put it that way. And I
mean, that's fine. It's like, I don't know. I don't know Chris Rock. I don't think he's listening to this right now. So it's like, I think
Chris Rock is awesome. It's not about Chris. Samuel L. Jackson plays his father. It's two great actors and a comedian, a great fantastic comedian who you wouldn't conceive of that. It's a natural step. You get your entertainment value. Let's put it that way. Right. But I will say this: there's no.
I feel like you want to be in the second in the sequel, and that's why you keep doing this. It's like, no, it's a great movie.
But it's life is relatively normal. They made an announcement before the movie, though. Before the lights went down, they go, "You must keep your masks on during the movie."
Which, so did people do that?
No, I looked down my each aisle and I was like, no, I don't see anybody. Who's going to keep their mask on?
What was the capacity?
I would say it was probably about 30%.
Okay.
Did
they make you, do they have blocked seats, like blocked off and stuff like that? Like,
I think maybe they just, nothing was blocked off, but I think maybe they would only sell certain seats.
Sure
that, and then just insist that people sit in their assigned seats. And then, and they say wear a mask. And if outside the theater too, they wouldn't let us linger in our own area. Yeah. There's no seats. So it was very bare bones.
What about popcorn and stuff?
Popcorn was being sold, but bars weren't open. There's no bars open. There's even the bar in the cafe. So, because I met with my friends,
but you can't
early.
Drink, but you can eat popcorn. What about like soda and stuff?
You can get soda, yes.
So, like actual drinking?
Yeah. I mean the actual bar. Yeah.
But like you drink bar. Beer when you go to see a movie?
Well, if you're meeting people at 7 o'clock for an 8:30 movie, hour, usually you have a couple of beers, chat in the bar, and then you get your popcorn and go, yes. That would be a thing. And that's not happening now. And there's no, so there was no, and then all the bars at the City Walk too, it was like a 2-hour wait. So none of us could wait that long anyway. Wow. And their bars aren't open either. So they only have certain tables.
Did you go by yourself or was this a date or what?
Okay, I keep saying friends. I've been saying with friends for the last couple, but it was I was on a date.
Too bad we can't talk about it. We're gonna have to talk about it later.
I'll tell you about it later.
That's why.
Because for now we have a very important interview to get to. Very important guest.
Very, very excited. I mean, I was like, when you told me, I was very excited because I'm a very huge fan of him. Because of he's been on the show Veep, he was a regular there. He's also been on the Goldbergs, and he's in a new show that just got renewed on HBO Max called Made for Love. So check it out. And I was very, very excited to have this guest in the podcast.
Bacchanal, everybody, is joining us. So why waste any more time? Let's get to the...
Yeah, and it was fun. It was great talking to him. He had so much...
He was
fantastic.
I love it. Even early on, can I just... where early on, he tells a story, and I love it when a guest... tells a story and then says to us, "Guys, I've never told that to anybody before."
Yeah,
we're on a roll for that. So that was fun. So
that is, which is good. I think people trust us. So like that's great. And also he had like also very cool stories about like working in the industry. Then how did he become who he is? You know, all his experiences. And I didn't know he traveled so much, which was so interesting to hear. Like that was such a break. And he gave us he gave us some great advice too on travel. So. Yeah. Please check it out. We're not going to waste any more time. So just, you know.
Here we go.
Make this episode. Bye, Adam.
Ben Bacchanal, everybody.
Hey.
Yes.
Hey. Yeah, it is Dan Bacchanal, ladies and gentlemen. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm really good. It's fantastic to see you. Fantastic to see you.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. Just quick, are you based in LA or are you going?
Yeah, I live in Los Angeles.
Okay,
I'm struck by how much Jay looks like one of the Gibbs. You look like you'd be in the Bee Gees, dude.
Yeah, I've heard that before. And I just got the haircut, too.
Yeah.
I've never seen it before.
Well, that's why when he goes get a haircut, he gets the Bee Gees haircut. So that's probably why.
Give me the Barry Gibb.
Give me
you
the Gibb.
You don't want to go with the Maurice? I don't want the Maurice.
Yeah, give me the Gibb. I've got the vinyl collection as well. I admire your vinyl collection behind you there.
Oh, thank you. Excellent. I got some Bee Gees in there.
Yeah, that's nice. I just walk into the shop with the Bee Gees album. I go, there, do it. Save
that
me.
One.
I mean, that was a good... It was a good 7 or 8 inches I lost off my
hair.
Hard.
Are you talking about hair, right? Okay, go.
Yes.
All right,
I definitely am. Quarantine hasn't been that bad. I haven't made those kind of decisions. So, but Dan, I feel like I miss you, buddy. It's great to see you again. But you've been on my television so often because, is it The Heat that's on all the time on TNT this month? Like I think they bought The Heat this month. So that's on like every second night, and I happen to be channel flipping right when you're there causing shit. And you're always on our screens. I assume you've still been busy even in the time of quarantine.
Well, there was that 9 months where nobody did anything, nobody was allowed to work or anything, and then as soon as that was done, we went back to finish up Made for Love, which was the HBO Max show. That I did that actually just got picked up for a second season. So thank you to anyone who's watching that. Thank you. We went back to finish that up and I went back to do the Goldbergs because I do a recurring guest star on the Goldbergs. Mm-hmm. And so I went back and did both of those. Now I'm working on one of the American Crime Story shows, but I'm not allowed to say anything because,
of course, because it's always
but they're based on real life. So people, any story points could just be looked up on Wikipedia anyway, but whatever. I'll do what they say.
Nice.
Right. Now, is that extra exciting for you to step, like, because as you're a comedic, you know, you're the man comedically, and now to stretch your acting chops to do serious stuff. Do you enjoy doing that, stepping out of the comedy world and going?
Yeah. I think, I've always tried to approach it as the same animal, no matter what it was, whether it was comedic or dramatic. I was always approaching it like, well, is the person pissed off? Well, then you're pissed, whether it's comedy or drama, play it as angry as possible. And if it's a comedy, it's going to be funny. And if it's a drama, it's going to be dramatic.
Right.
So.
Right.
But do you make an adjustment by the angriness of like the, if it's a comedy or a drama, or do you just play it the same?
No, I mean, like Veep is probably the most angry I've ever been on camera. Okay. And it's a comedy, and
it's
people
hilarious.
Are like, that character is hilarious. I'm like, if you say so, I'm just letting out my anger in those moments.
Wow, that's awesome.
Because I'm excited to take a quick trip down memory lane, because you were one of the first, this is going to be an oversimplification, but you, my friend, are one of the first Americans I met, because I was basically fresh off the plane. I had come from Britain, fresh off the plane, and I took basically the taxi to the set of Legit, where you were starring with my good friend Jim Jeffries and DJ Qualls, and so that's how I met you. I was fresh off the plane. I was like, "How you doing, you guys?" That was that show and that experience right away. That was like a playground for you guys. Yeah. Like you guys were having so much. I couldn't believe what I had walked into. I thought it was going to be all serious. I had just flown all the way across the ocean. I was like, "Oh God, I don't think I should be on a TV like set right now, all serious and quiet, please, and action and all this." And I show up and I swear to God, you guys were just, you know, just farting around and fooling around and having a laugh. And then when the cameras were on, you were riffing. I don't know if you semi-stayed on script and just crushing it.
Yeah.
With comedic moments on camera all the time.
Jim. It's Jim. That's why. I mean, you know, I think we both have a real love for Jim. And, you know, to me, that was the first time I ever met him, was working on that show. So all I knew was, here's this guy who's in charge of the show. You better behave yourself. Next thing I know, he's calling me spoon face and flicking me in the balls. And I went, okay, we're going to be okay.
Yeah, that's the level we're working with. This is going to be just fine. I mean, I think that's going to be perfect. When you get, you guys, because you all had serious chemistry. I couldn't believe what I got to watch.
Well, you know, I mean, that's how he is. If you're in, you're in. And if you're out, you're not playing anyway. Like, that's how Jim is. So if you're in the game, you're in. So, I mean, we were made to feel welcome and part of the team immediately.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's amazing. And, of course, and then you came and worked on the Jim Jeffries show with us. So your resume is one to be totally admired. And we really appreciate you. We really appreciate
it's a resume full of Jim.
Yeah, to hang over with us. And so I mentioned just before we went on air, I said I realized myself I only learned about this the Florida Man, right? How you guys all have these memes in America. I think the rest of the world knows about them now, but I've learned about the Florida Man since I moved here. And I did mention to you because I knew that you defined it before we came on air, because I actually said it came out of my mouth. I said, "Now you're a Florida Man. Do you consider yourself a Florida?" And then you quickly went, "Well, I'm from Florida.
From Florida." But back in my drinking days, I was certainly a Florida Man. Florida Man arrested for, I'll tell you this quick story. We're at a place called Margarita y Amigas in Stuart, Florida, which is my hometown.
Where is Stuart? And is that close
to
where?
It's like north of Palm Beach.
Okay.
Yeah, Martin County. And I got lit. And the manager was kind of tired of our noise. And I went, "Oh, pardon me, sir." And I placed my ass on his leg. And I went, and I cut a fart right on his leg. And he went, "That's it." And he called the cop. And the cop showed up. And I almost got arrested. I got a citation because I talked my way out of it by saying, "Come on, I farted on the guy." that was a Florida Man. The Florida Man arrested for farting on Margarita y Amiga's manager.
That's hilarious. It's funny that he's like, that was his last straw. He's like, "All right, well, okay, no farting on the manager." It says on the sign right here.
It is pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
When you think about it, I mean, like, it's not my proudest moment. This is the first time I've ever said this in public, so thanks for dragging that out. But it is some of my most.
But you were young, right? It was you were like.
I was in my early 30s.
Okay.
That's a perfect excuse. Yes, I was young. I was younger then. I mean, we're automatically younger then, but.
Yeah.
Sure, let's use that as an excuse. I mean, hey, at the start of this podcast, we were younger.
We were all younger when we met.
But it works. I mean, so that's really exciting, because being in Florida for that amount of time, and then I'm aware that then you made the move to Chicago. So that's how much I know about your early career. I'm not sure if Florida influenced you as much as obviously going to Chicago, you know, and starting doing improv there, right? That's your big, like, that's your greatest influence in the comedy influence, is it? When you're moving to Chicago.
Yeah, for sure. Because I think I went to Florida State, and I loved it. I had a great time. But really, I was there to watch football and drink and eat mushrooms. There were a lot of mushrooms that grew in the fields there, and that was kind of what I was all about, you know?
Hang out with other mushrooms back then. So, wow, you're like with the pioneers, because now it's like being popular. So, like, you knew it back then.
Yeah, we were mushroom pioneers. And then when I got to Chicago and I found the Improv Olympic, which later became the IO and is now defunct, and the Second City, I kind of found my crowd. You know, I found the group that I could fit in with. Improvisers just kind of worked. It worked for me because it was that marriage of theater, comedy with right now. And I was terrified of stand-up, so that's the reason I never even tried. And I'm glad I didn't really put any effort into stand-up, because I think I would have failed and perhaps gone home with my tail between my legs, and maybe I wouldn't be where I am. But with improv, I found out real quick that all you had to do is kind of be real in the moment, and people would appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. I had that different. I started with improv and moved to L.A. to do improv at the Groundlings. And I didn't find that, like, group of people. Like, I think everybody, you know, and for me, then that's what led me to do stand-up. Because then I was like, because I think if I would have found that group of people, I would have stayed doing improv and not stand-up. So it was a little different.
That's the Chicago attitude, too, though, is that it's a pub mentality. You know, it's we all go to the club together. We watch each other's show. Maybe this person backs out and they don't show up. I get to sit in or something. And then afterwards, we're all going out for beers. So there was a very pub mentality in Chicago. So there was a real, you know, very blue collar city. And I love it. I think it's my favorite city in the U.S. for sure. And I would have stayed forever if it weren't for the vision of bigger and better things show business wise.
Right. Okay. So there is you do start to see a bit of a ceiling in Chicago, because I mean, it's such an improv hub. That I'm like, what is, like, you hear so much about all, like, you know, other than New York. I mean, it's a stronger improv hub than LA even, isn't it?
Yeah. It was before the pandemic, yes. And then once the pandemic came along, things kind of fell apart. The IO shuttered up for good, due to other issues, but it happened during the pandemic, and now that's gone. And that'll probably lead to a serious hemorrhaging of bodies. But, you know, it's a thing where you can only go so far with that. And then you can do a guest spot on whatever two TV shows are shooting there. And you can do whatever movies are going to be there, but you're not going to get the big roles. I mean, very few people have been able to stay there and carve out a television and film career while staying based in Chicago. It's just not, it's a little more Herculean. Plus I got the Daily Show, which took me out of Chicago to New York. So, you know, who knows? I might still be there if it hadn't been for the Daily Show.
So the Daily Show was the big gig that you got that made you move then to New York.
Yeah. Yeah. They came through and they auditioned a bunch of people they auditioned a lot of the local stand-ups, a lot of the local comics, and a lot of the local improvisers and sketch comedians and actors at the different theaters. And I got put in one of those barrels, and right on. I don't know, they picked me. They didn't like me once I got there, but they picked me.
That happens, doesn't it?
That seems to be the story of my life.
You were sticking out of the barrel. You were so big. You were sticking out of the barrel. They're like, let's take that one. Then they went, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Before we carry on with that, I'm just curious. One other thing is Francisco and I love to talk about, like, the decisions that we made earlier in our careers and stuff. And, like, as Francisco said, you know, moving here for improv, but then going into stand-up, you know, individually. I moved to Britain on my own. When you did make the move and you knew you wanted to go into improv and stuff, were you doing it with any friends or anything? Or did you just kind of go, no, I'm just going to go do this because either I'm going to fail on my own in front of strangers, or did you go with friends? Like, we're going to form a troupe and we're going
to... No, I went by myself. I mean, I moved to Chicago with a girlfriend and she dumped me 4 months after we got there. Wow. And so I didn't... The only people I knew were her friends.
That happened exactly to me. Like, I moved here, and then my girlfriend dubbed me like four. And I've never been depressed in my life. And I feel that's. I remember being in a studio apartment. It was like a Saturday. It was all dark. Yes. Just sleeping like this, and I'm like, "What is going on?" I used to promote parties in DC, and I was like, "What is this?" It was so depressed. And the thing was, like, I felt bad. It was like I feel like it was because she's surprised. I was gonna break up with her in my plan. I was like, and then she jumped the gun, and I was like,
Oh man,
no, I came with her, and when she dumped me, that was it. All of her friends went with her, and I had nobody.
Oh,
but I was doing theater, and I was doing a play at the time with Nick Offerman and a whole bunch of other, you know, great Chicago people. But Nick, of course, people know. And we were doing this great play called The Kentucky Cycle, and it was a 2-night play. It was 7 hours long. And I made a bunch of friends in that cast, real friends. And a couple of them were like, "Why aren't you doing improv? You should be doing improv because that's Chicago, right?" And I said, "Well, I came here for that, but I'm kind of afraid to do it." And they were like, "Oh, just go do it already." So I went and I started doing it. And next thing I knew, I was kind of like rising through the ranks pretty quickly.
Nice. It's funny how people like how sometimes we need that little push. I always feel like that's life telling you, like, "Hey, do this," you know, and like we don't realize until somebody tells us. And it's like, yeah, why not? You know, so that's a cool thing to feel. I'm a very big believer on that. So I like hearing those things because it's always somebody telling you, like, you're like, "Yeah, okay, fine, I'll do it." And then all of a sudden it's like, "Oh yeah, I'm good at this."
I think it also can coincide with having our hearts broken because sometimes we feel there's nothing left to lose. My heart's broken. I can die in front of these people. I don't mind.
If someone had told me to go down to the stockyards, I'd have been like, "Okay, I'll go cut cows open. I don't, whatever. You got it. You know, just give me a direction. I'm in."
Good luck. You didn't have your own friends with butchers or something like that.
Exactly.
Hey, I got a couple of cows. Like, all right. That's great. So then you moved to New York, and then New York, how long were you there in New York?
I was just there for 2 years. I had a 2-year contract with The Daily Show, and it just almost immediately out of the bag, it was like, this isn't a good fit. I'm not political. I had no guts to write anything back then. Mm. I pretty much same thing, like I said about stand-up, was like the reason I never really tried it. Well, the reason I had never tried it, period, full stop, was because I thought, but it's too hard. Look at how it makes me laugh. I can't possibly do that, so I'm not going to try. And I had the same approach to sketch comedy, and I had the same approach to The Daily Show. Rob Corddry is so funny because he's writing his own stuff. Stephen Colbert was so funny because he was writing his own stuff. I'm not going to be able to do that, so I'm not going to try. And that, you know, ultimately, it took me 10 years after the job was over to realize, oh, that's what happened. But that is what happened.
That you just didn't, you know, you were just kind of like afraid of right. Oh, but it's funny because it's like, I feel like, I don't know, as a stand up, that's the first thing that I ever did. And like, then I look at people like you and I go like, that is so like so hard to me, dude, you know, like to get to be that person and in a scene and not break character and be there and kind of like, because it's a comic. Your first thing is to like call out the awkwardness. Yeah. So when you're in audition and you see the person just like looking at their phone, and I'm like, "Hey, what the fuck? I'm doing an audition in here, you know."
And like, I've done that too. I had a guy once. I don't know. It was like some space show or something, and I showed up like, "All right, I'll wear a tracksuit because in the future everyone's wearing an outfit, right?" And I thought, "I'm a bald-headed guy in a tracksuit. They won't forget me." And this guy over here is like this. And I just did like this, boom, on the floor with my foot. And I went, "Hey." And he looked at me and I went, "All right, man, let's do this, right?" And I don't remember who it was. You know, for all I know, it could have been.
And that was, you know, Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't, you know. And I just basically was like, "I am not going to come in here all prepared and dressed in my best tracksuit and have you fall asleep on me." Like, so I've done it too.
I have a feeling that's happened to you a few times, because I hear even the way you met Jim on his thing for Legit. I think maybe I'll leave it to you to relay that story.
It's just, they told us, when we were going to audition for Legit, they said, now there's going to be some improv in the audition, so, you know, don't be afraid of that. And I said, I'm not, I, you know, I,
that's what I did.
You know, I improvised for drunk Cubs fans when the best they could get was like Kerry Wood throwing strikeouts Sammy Sosa eating whatever it was he was eating to hit all those home runs. That was the highlight. So like, I'm good. I'm not afraid of a tough crowd. But I didn't think that, I thought, like, Jim's going to improvise with me. And I come in, and he goes, hey, tonight. Didn't look up at me. And I went, oh, shit. This guy. That's okay. Sometimes you know you don't have the job when you walk in because they look at you and they go, And then he did the scene with me looking at his script the whole time. And when I was done, he was like, he and Peter O'Fallon, the showrunner, were like, all right, that was great. Thanks. And I left, and I was like, these fucking guys, he never even fucking looks at me. He doesn't. They tell me they're going to improvise, and he never takes his eyes off the script. Fuck this Australian guy, man. This is bullshit. I was furious. I walked out to my car. I had a parking ticket.
Oh,
you know,
man.
And I was like, oh. And then I got a call like 2 days later. Hey, you booked it.
Wow.
And I thought, how is that possible? The guy didn't even look at me. And when I met Jim and told him that, he's like, mate, because I've been improvising with other people, and it was throwing them. And so I just decided from then on I wasn't going to improvise in the audition. I was just going to read it exactly as it was on the page. And, I mean, JJ, you know, like, and Francisco, I don't know how well you know Jim, but, like, that's the thing, like, the image of Jim is, like, oh, this tough fucking Australian guy. But ultimately, there's a really, really sweet person in there. And that was him going, I don't want to mess up your opportunity. So I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to look at the thing. And then I realized, oh, man. Then he bought me lunch. So
we're even. Because this is one of those, I don't know if it's a game of telephone or the story develops over time. Because you know the way this story will go is that you come back into the room and you go, hey, you know what else? Fuck you. I got a parking ticket, you motherfucker. But that's not something that happened.
No, what happened was they brought me back for a callback. And when I got back to the callback, I said, well, I hope this goes better than last time because I got a parking ticket last time I was here, right?
That's funny.
So that is true. It's just,
It's even funnier if you compact it into the one audition. And but that is very funny. I think that's when he fell in love with you right there. He probably was like, oh.
Probably. That's the beauty of Jim. Weird shit happens to him. He puts it all together, and the next thing you know, Neil Diamond is cockfighting Anthony Hopkins in a disco in 1978, you know?
That is it's so funny how those things like that, like when you think something, it's like, well, this could have gone the worst, you know, they hate me. And then all of a sudden you get this stuff. And it's kind of like, it shows you how what weird this industry is and this business is that, like, you never know. I mean, you could do the things and you're like, this is great. And they're like, nothing. And then the ones that you're like, well, that was fucked up. And then you get it. It's like, you have no idea.
I've had all versions, man. I've had all versions. The one where you're like, I nailed it and you get it. I nailed it. I don't get it. I nailed it. And I get a complaint from the casting director that I did something inappropriate or something. You go, I thought I nailed that thing. And I've had ones where I went in an audition and it said 60-year-old man pops. And I'm like, why am I even here? And the director says, you're probably wondering why you're here. And I say, yeah. And he goes, don't worry about it. The part's already yours. And I'm like, I haven't even read.
Wait, and then you're going like, wait, so do I look like a 60-year-old man? He's like, what are you talking about, man?
What kind of typecasting is this? Yeah, the town that I've learned that saying of kill your babies. I've learned to let them go as well because of that. Same thing on the Jim Jeffries show. When I used to present my writing on the Jim Jeffries show, I would keep all my discards. I would keep the things that I thought were garbage. And several times with the head writer, I'd be like, yeah, those back four pages are just the garbage ones. And he'd be like, oh, really? And then boom, those are the ones that he likes the most. You never know how it's being perceived by other people when you're like, oh, yeah, no, I know what's gold and what's not. No, we don't.
And, you know, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to make it all about this, but like that's a point that I try to remind, like I'll meet young actors or young writers or something and they'll be like, you have any advice? And I'm like, yeah, you never know what they're thinking. So just do it for you.
Yeah.
You know, your first draft is just for you, they say, and it's like every draft is just for me until they start paying me and giving me notes.
Yeah.
It's just for me.
Yeah.
If you're not paying me, why am I going to do it your way? I would not be a good staff writer, I don't think, for somebody else's vision, because I'd be writing it the way I want it, and then I'd say, now give me your notes, and then I'll do what you want. But first, I'm going to write it my way. Mm. And that's kind of the way I try to do my career, too, is like I don't turn hardly anything down, but there's been a couple of times I have, because I looked at the person I was would be working with, and I said, they're not fun. They're not having a good time.
Mm.
And if I don't get to have a good time, man, I'm out. I have no interest in it.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great advice.
Yeah. Really good advice. Like, yeah. Never assume that they feel the exact same way that you do about whatever we're turning up.
Yeah. Yeah.
100%.
Right. I wanted to go back, cause this is like, we talk about travel and stuff like that. And you know, you obviously have traveled a lot I'm assuming that you travel a lot, obviously, because of your jobs, you know, all the jobs that you get, that you go from location to location. But two questions, like, how is that in terms of the job travels, and where have you gone? Is it a location that you have loved? And also if you have traveled by yourself, like when you were younger, you know, like if there's anywhere that you're like, oh, man, this is the place that I love.
Seems like every job I get winds up having a travel element to it. So since being an actor, my first job was as a repertory theater company, and we left Rockport, Texas, which is down by Corpus Christi.
Yeah.
And we drove all the way up to Maine, all the way out to Oregon, all the way down to San Diego, all the way down to Miami, and everything in between
for
10 months. Got in a van with a suitcase and came back 10 months later.
Wow.
So there's that kind of travel. And then in Chicago, I worked for the Second City Touring Company. We went everywhere. We did USO tours to Kosovo and Bahrain. And then we did a Far East Asian tour. I'm looking at the map. Japan, Hong Kong. Wow. We went to Tokyo, Hong Kong, Bangkok, and Singapore. And that was like a three-week tour. You know, some of these, like right after 9/11, I did what they called a ski tour for the Second City, which is you fly out to Denver and then you start driving north through all the ski towns. Then you turn around and drive south through all the ski towns until you get to El Paso. So tons of travel. I think my favorite place I traveled, though, was I went to Cape Town for a movie with Johnny Knoxville. And I was the only one there who I don't get loaded anymore. And I'm the only one there who doesn't get loaded. And I'm in Cape Town, which is almost like Vegas in New Orleans in a different country.
Oh, right.
You know, it's a party town. And so I was alone a lot. And so I saw that city and that countryside by myself for the most part. And I found out that I can do that, which was kind of cool.
Nice. Like,
I was so accustomed to traveling with an ensemble, both in that repertory theater and with the Second City. That, and also with the Daily Show, come to think of it, we traveled a ton as correspondents. Mm. You'd fly out, but you'd fly out with a field producer. So you'd be joined at the hip with someone that's writing and producing the piece with you. But on this film, I was alone 90% of the time. And I'd be like, well, I'm going to climb that hill today.
Oh, wow.
And people, and they go, sir, it's not safe to go up there by yourself. And I was like, well, I don't have a fucking option, Mark.
Right, you know, I'm not drinking.
I'm not drinking, man. So give me this, bro.
That's
stand-up. I mean, that's literally, that's like what we do as stand-ups. You're by yourself and you're like, well, I guess I'll go by myself and, you know, climb this thing. And then, you know, so it's that's a very stand-up way of traveling.
Because everyone's drinking,
like, you got it.
Drinking kills a lot of time. It's
a
big void to fill once you
go. Dude.
That used to occupy so much time. I
was in Cape Town 6 weeks and I worked 12 days.
Oh. So that's
I had on average 5 days off.
Dude, wow.
Where I was like, you can only see so many movies in offer comp, before you go like, I can't do it.
That happened to me like in a very small scale when my first cruise that I did for stand up, and like, I only had like one show, and then the rest I was like, and there, you know, and I watched
every season of The Love Boat because that's the only channel that they had. And I'm calling my manager. I'm going like, what is? I feel like I'm in. He's like, dude, you're having a mental breakdown. I was like, yes, there's nothing to do. I got my loan. Yeah. I am like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And The Love Boat as well. There's Cocktail. I don't remember his name.
God, I watch everything.
He's mixing cocktails, and you're trying to stay sober.
Yeah. I had the model down path. Now I'm pitching shows that are like Love Boat. It's like, hey, yeah.
how about like, Love Boat, but it's on a bus?
But in the desert, not a bus. And the driver is Jesus.
It's going to be a hit.
That's oh wow! So you did travel a lot. Wow! And then besides, when you visit Cape Town and went all over, any hobbies or things that you also that when you're on the road, either you know in set or something, but you know, is there something that you like to do, like go to a favorite coffee place or a favorite restaurant? Or
yeah,
something
like something on top of going for these hikes and stuff like that. Like, are you sportsman?
Yeah, like in Cape Town, for instance, I said, like, you got to get us into a rugby match. I want to go see a live rugby match in a place where it actually matters, where people in a full stadium. And I went and saw a rugby match. I go to every record store I can find. I don't really buy stuff because it sucks to try to travel back with them. But I love to go in and look. Bookstores, too. Yeah. But I just love walking around wherever I am, if it's safe.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not always safe, you know. No. You find out when you're. I've done three different movies in New Orleans, and each time I was there for anywhere from 3 weeks to 2 months, and you run out of safe places to walk around, and eventually you're like, "I'm going down this alley. I don't care what they say. I'm bored, and I got to find something to do." Man. But live music too, man. Live music takes up a lot of time. If you got the nights off, I like to go see a local music scene, whatever they've got.
Yeah,
that's fun. That's something that I, you know, be cool too. But for us comics, like most of the times, those when we're performing, so it's like
exactly.
It has to be like a late night show or something. Like Vegas, you can do a little bit when you're in Vegas. You know, you do your spot
in New Orleans kind
of, or New Orleans, places like that.
You feel very lucky when you're performing at a stand-up club that has a music venue or a cool kind of dive bar like near it or in the same strip mall. That seems like a treat. I mean, so often, especially here in North America, I find stand-up comedy clubs are in strip malls in the middle of nowhere and there's not even like they're the bar and they're going to close after.
Yeah.
So you're kind of isolated.
So
it's an absolute treat if you find out, oh, there's a dive bar down the road and there's a band playing. Perfect. Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
5 minute walk.
And I wanted to ask, when you travel, do you have any superstitious items or sentimental items that you bring with you?
Are you a superstitious man? I always like to guess.
JJ always likes to guess.
I'm going to guess no. I don't know why, but I feel like you're not a superstitious man. But
I'm not superstitious about certain things. What I do is I touch the plane as I get on every single time. I touch the outside.
Notre Dame, like hitting the board.
Fly like a fucking champion today. You know, but really, I think it's the first time that I ever did it. I was like, I think I was stoned to the bone. And I was getting on and I was like, man, this thing's going to be 30,000 feet in the air pretty soon, man. And I just touched it. Wow. And then it just kind of became a thing, like that plane didn't crash, so I'm gonna do that every time.
Nice.
But otherwise, no. I mean, I usually carry like these headphones and a pair of AirPods and an iPad and a laptop. Like I carry as much entertainment as I possibly can, a book which I never read on the plane. Yeah. I open it, I fall asleep, and that's the end of it. But I can't sleep on planes. Even when I drank, I couldn't sleep on planes.
What about with edibles now and stuff like that? Like that doesn't.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I suppose that would probably work, but then I'd also probably be like, "Let me in!" at the cockpit. Like, you gotta hear what I was thinking about.
Well, I don't know which edibles you're doing. I'm talking. I mean, I got ones that are very.
That's the point. I did, it would go bad. It would probably. It would go from edibles to whatever whiskey to.
I started very late in the edibles game, so that's why I'm like very excited about it, because I started just doing it like 5 years ago. So I'm like, oh yeah, it's great, bro. You just could fall asleep, you eat a bunch of pretzels and, you know.
No. All I ever did was smoke it, and I used to have to travel with it in my pants, you know, in my underwear band.
Yeah.
Because I was like, no one's going to pat down your actual cock and balls, so you just hang it over the lip of your underwear band. And nowadays, they don't even give a shit.
Yeah, now it's like, whatever. Yeah, it's like, now it's like, it doesn't, now it's every, you can just buy it anywhere.
Like, now you're buying these, you buy, I buy edible candies, and they can just go in a bag of candy. It looks like you just bought it at the store. So as long as you know that the gummy bears are the marijuana, and then all the other ones.
Yeah,
all the other types, jelly babies and stuff, are not. Then you know, but it's, you know, you can still have too many at 20,000 feet.
Yes, I think so.
Start to sweat. No, but I feel that way too. I've never felt comfortable enough to sleep on a plane, even if I'm in first class or anything like that. I just think even in luxury, if you're over 6'1", it's just a pain in the ass.
Last time I flew international for a job, they flew us first class, and I said to the lady, I said, I'm sorry, excuse me, do you have any longer beds? And she said, sir, this is the same bed everyone has. And I was like, I'm not going to sleep. And she kind of was like, well, that sounds like your problem. And I said, okay. And then it was like, ding, ding, every 40 minutes. Like, you got any more of those cookies or a magazine or something? Like a 16-hour flight, I'm going out of my mind.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Did you guys hear this? This was on the news this weekend, actually. They haven't readjusted the airlines, what they think the weight of a human man and a human woman is, since like the 60s for flying. So they have, so I don't know if you guys know this. So this just happened on the weekend. They pointed out that like a human man is listed at like 190 and a human woman is like 160. And they've been using that math since the 60s. They haven't adjusted it to all these 240-pound, 250-pound human beings.
Fuck, that, dude, are getting on more planes than that. Now. Shit, I'm 220, and I don't even look fat.
I mean, have you seen...
Like, stood up.
Have you seen a Spirit flight? That's like, I think the average is like, the Spirit is 220 in that is all those flights.
Spirit.
The Spirit, I mean, I don't know if I flew, but like, because to me, that's always, it's such a pyramid scheme. It's kind of like, yeah, the ticket is $30. And then as you get there, it's like, well, if you want to sit, that's $20. If you want to
standing room,
if you want a seat belt, that's $100. It's like, what the, you know, so it's like, they keep adding the stuff. So I don't know.
I end up going like with my, it's Los Angeles in the middle of summer, but I got my winter, because I'm flying to New York. So, and then I got a winter jacket. I got all my layers of clothes for the weekend so that I can save the $15. I'll tell you how I saw it, because it was a story about Dave Bautista, who actor, wrestler turned actor.
Right. Yeah.
And he's a big 340-pound man or whatever. And so I think they were asking him, because he buys two seats now. He buys two first-class seats to travel, which must never get never be not weird, because he's sitting next to an empty seat. So I'm sure tons of people are like, can I just sit there? And you have to go, no, I bought it. I bought it for me.
That's mine.
That's for this half of me. That's for this other half of me right here.
That's $15,000.
Yeah.
On my right side.
Yeah.
I also wanted to kind of go back to when you were in Florida growing up, and talk about also like family holidays, family travels that you ever did. Like, you know, any great memories that you have from with your family traveling?
I'm part of a Brady Bunch family. There was three of us, and then there was four. My dad had four kids, my stepdad, and we got together, and there were seven of us. So,
that's cool.
And then we went up to Minnesota every single summer. So every summer there was a family caravan with the pot smoking high school age kids in one car driving, and then mom and dad in the other car with the three of us that were too young to do that. And they'd be driving by us like, hey man, you're cool, man.
Love you, brother.
Love you, man. And then we'd meet them at the rest stop. But my parents had a calendar that they made up. We used to go to a place called Kettle Falls, which is in International Falls, Minnesota, which is Frostbite Falls from Rocky and Bullwinkle fame.
And now your parents were from Minnesota, were they?
And I was born in Minnesota, and all my siblings were born in Minnesota, come to think of it. So we're all Minnesota people, but we moved to Florida. So we're part of the problem, really, more than anything else. You know, Florida would just be a hot, sweaty place with a few desperate rednecks, but instead it's loaded with people because everyone wants to get away from the cold. But and we would drive all the way up there, and I would go My mom and dad had a calendar, 2 months worth of calendar, and it was Danny in Rochester, Tom in Mound, Jen, it, like all of our names listed and where we were going to be, what dates and what phone numbers. Like craziness, man. Oh. But we went on a, actually one trip that stands out, we went on a cruise to Alaska when I was, like before cruises were a thing, there was like two cruise lines, Sitmar and then whatever the cruise line was that was
Princess
Norway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but before Princess even came along, it was before Love Boat days. Well, I mean, that's Princess had been there, but I hadn't heard of it. But and we went to Alaska, so we flew out to San Francisco, the whole family on a plane together, raising fucking hell on the plane, bunch of kids. Then we stayed in a hotel for 4 days, and then we got on this cruise and went up there. Everybody knew us on the cruise because the older kids were getting in trouble drinking and carousing. And the younger kids were getting in trouble because we're youngest of seven. So we're, you know, fucking what? It's like Shameless, the movie, the TV show.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Except on a, there you go. There's your new pitch.
There it is. It's that's the pitch.
There it is.
With we a Brady it. Bunch family.
Yeah, with a Brady Bunch family.
We got it, everybody.
Yeah. And one alien wearing a tracksuit.
Yeah. That's
that gets pissed when people don't sleep on them.
Oh man, he gets mad if they fall asleep on him.
Oh wow, that's because especially a cruise is like, it is like for kids or for like older people. It's such a, it's, I mean, it's like that's why older they like it because it's like everything's there. You don't have to walk. You get, I mean, like you literally go there and eat every time. So like for a kid, I mean, I that's one of the things I remember. I was like when I was on those cruises, I was like, yeah, if I was like a little kid, I would have loved this. You know, you're like, because your parents obviously like, where are you gonna go? Where are you gonna jump off the boat? It's like, yeah, go whatever. I don't care. I'll sit here.
Yeah.
So then you can run around and do
dinner. There's only one place to go for dinner. Boom, boom, boom. Dinner time. But my brother, they lost my brother's luggage. That's the best part of the story. Is they lost my brother's luggage. And then there's those dinners where you have to dress a certain way.
Yeah.
Like you have to be semi-formal. Well, all he had was the t-shirt and jeans he got on the ship in. So he had to borrow clothes from, I don't remember if he borrowed from my sisters or not, but he certainly borrowed from the porters and the bellmen, the employees on the ship.
Because
they were like, well, we're so sorry that the airline lost your clothes.
Yeah.
That, like, in the big family photo and the big fancy dinner, he's wearing a vest. The same as the vest that the waiters are wearing and his shirt. With his little sneakers.
That's
so
funny.
Was good stuff.
That's hilarious.
Yeah,
that's
perfect,
so funny.
Perfect for your siblings to witness that. And then, so those experiences from when you were younger, we're dying to know how they influenced, because now that you're a family man yourself, how do they influence how you, because, okay, here, like both of us, we don't have kids or anything yet, Francisco and I, but when we travel on the road to do shows and stuff, I think we often come back. We don't want to go on a holiday. We don't want to go on another trip. We actually want to be a staycation, I guess, kind of thing. Which you probably can't do when you're a young dad and stuff. So how do you influence, you know, your family travel decisions now?
Well, I think, like I said, my parents had that calendar with everything planned out. I try to go with like,
there we go.
How do I know how this 8-year-old, the last big trip we took was, in Canada, we flew into Calgary and drove over to Vancouver and stopped all along the way at different beautiful towns and everything.
That's
right?
Really summertime. That's a very pretty drive.
Gorgeous. Oh, yeah. And summertime, right? So
through the Rockies.
But I was like, and I was like, well, we'll stop here, but I don't know anything else. You know, that's all I know. And we're going to stop at this town and stay in this place, but that's all I know. I don't care if we get in at 10 o'clock at night or 4 in the morning or when. It doesn't matter to me. So I try to be a lot more loose with it. And I also try to, like, I don't go for me. I'm going for the kids.
Yeah.
You know, my opportunity to travel was before I had kids, and it'll come after my kids go to college or whatever they wind up doing, right?
Yeah.
So my focus on those trips is always on the kids. I don't think my parents were, you know, in the 70s and 80s, parents weren't necessarily going like, well, now what are the kids doing?
Like,
fuck them. You know.
Yeah. You're coming with us, and that's it. Like, we're going to Vegas, and we're gonna gamble the whole week, and that's what we're gonna do. So chill. Yeah.
Yeah. But I know, obviously, I know all the ins and outs of like going through security and stuff. So it'll be very, it's frustrating going through with somebody. Like, you guys travel so much, you probably know more about it than I do. But I know enough to know, like, ahead of time, like, plastic bag, laptop, iPad, shoes, if I'm not paying for Clear or whatever the equivalent is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And with them, they're like, well, wait now, does he have to take his hat off? I said, go, just go. Because I know the guy behind me is going.
Is going, yeah. Family. Come on, we were ready. Come on, maybe, yeah. It's always like a business guy who travels, like George Clooney in that movie where he travels like every day. And he's going like, come on, I got this. And you're like, you could feel his stare going like, I'm like, bro, it's like, it's his first time traveling. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
My kids cute? No, get them out of my way.
I don't know, your kid's not cute. I'm 20,000 miles from home.
Man. And that's, is there like a vacation that you're planning now after, because of all this after pandemic with, you know, that you want to go or?
Yeah, I want to. Can I just tell you, buddy? Yeah, my heart did break a little bit because you're the first guest that we've had. Since, well, I mean, we're 20 something episodes in, so we haven't been going long anyway. We're only a couple months in, but you asked, you were like, can we do it? Are we doing it in person? And I so wish the answer was yes. It just brought me to this crushing blow of reality of like, yeah, we have been doing these studio interviews for a while now. I can't wait. Yeah, I know, we're so close. And then, it was a little bit heartbreaking to go, yeah, no, we're doing it over Zoom. We would love to.
Look, I mean, the beauty of this thing has been that we found out, holy shit, we can do this. Like, I don't know if you guys did any shows during the pandemic this, but, you know, comics could do stand-up shows on Zoom. Well, then I think just about anybody can do what they need to do because that feedback from the audience is so crucial. I can't imagine how difficult that must be.
But it was bad.
And Jay, the only reason I asked was I thought, maybe... You know, you never know. I did do one for the Second City, and they had a big plastic thing in between. We had to get tested beforehand. We can't, you know, like all that kind of shit.
Yeah. Well, we would have just trusted you. We don't have all that.
Vaccinated.
Like, are you vaccinated? Yeah, we're all vaccinated. Yeah. So it's like, all right, cool. You know, but
we're all vaccinated. So, it's hopefully. It's just a matter of time now. But it was exciting because you're the first person to ask, which made me go, oh, yeah, we're almost there.
That's how
there.
Close we are. We're so close. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to be.
I also wanted to go to, like, because you travel so much nationally and internationally, especially internationally. Is there any, I wanted to ask, is there any customs or traditions that you liked when being outside of the country that you'd be like, oh, this would be a cool thing that I bring back to America, that Americans would do or something like that?
Yeah, we went to Saudi Arabia for a USO tour. And the women in our group, none of us were married, so they had to travel in a different vehicle, and they had to wear the head coverings and everything. That'd be pretty cool. Bring that back. Could you imagine?
Can you imagine that being taken out of context right now?
No, because. Yeah. Please, I mean, that's the thing. That's the thing. We can definitely cut this and then put
it. Yeah, that's great.
Because viral.
Florida man canceled.
Yeah, Florida man wants to go back to the 50s. It's like, what?
Yeah, well, the whole fucking state of Florida wants to go back to the 50s. Yeah. But the thing about that was that, you know, of course, just like with female comics, right? They fucking were furious. The women in our group were furious because they were like, I have to cover my fucking, I'm going to be in a Jeep. I'm going to be in a vehicle. And they were like, yeah, but you don't want to. Don't mess around. It's Saudi Arabia. You don't want to mess around. So these, the fuck, man, it's terrible because they're very progressive. They're very, you know, and this was 2001. This is early 2001. Wow. So pre 9/11. And so obviously they were pissed and we were joking, you know, making fun of them and stuff. But at the same time, sympathy for them because we all travel together. Yeah. But no, I wouldn't want to bring that tradition back. I will say this. I thought the coffee in South Africa was the best coffee I've ever had. And I know everyone's like, oh, their wine is great. I was like, man, their coffee was great.
Really? Wow. Well, because you weren't drinking. You were drinking coffee and traveling, hiking 9,000 feet.
You were just getting your taste buds back.
that's what it was.
What is this elixir? That's coffee, sir. You're just tasting it for the first time in 15 years.
Joking.
Missing out on this.
But you know what I liked in Berlin train system is honor. It's honor system. It's like, yes, you have to pay for the train. And I was like, oh, okay, where do I pay? You pay at that box. Is there anyone paying attention to the box? No. And I'm like, how's that working out for you? And they're like, great, we have the cleanest, safest trains in the world. And I thought, I wish we did that here, but we'd fucking screw it up. You know we would. It would go broke in 2 weeks.
Yeah, people would be jumping on. I mean, people do it in New York anyways. Jump over the turn thing, you know. So it's like,
You can get away with it in parts of London. Well, it used to be paper tickets in London. You know, paper tickets into the little machine until I don't know, 15 years ago when it changed to the same cards that we all use. But yeah, there's a lot of overground train systems, I think, through Europe and including in Britain, where I remember you can get on and off as long as you know which stops are the unmanned, like not the main, you know, city type stops.
Yeah. Kind
of. But I would like to figure that out here. I was actually talking about that about the LA subway, because I find the LA subway efficient, but it has a stigma. I've never lived anywhere in the world where there's such a stigma around getting in that. And it's justified, isn't it?
Yeah. Because. Well, and that's what I was going to say back to, I think the honor system works in play. I think because, for example, in Venezuela, where I was born, the subway, it's one of the it was one of the first subways in South America, and it still runs great. And I think people still, you know, maintain it because it's the only way to travel. You know, it's the only way to move, you know, for poor people. So I think like having a, you know, maybe like when you have the honor system for something that people need, they're going to take care of it. Even if it's like, you know, because I feel like when it's something that people don't really use or don't really care. I mean, for example, here in LA, you know, everybody mostly has a car so that's probably why it would not work, because people are like, who gives a shit? I'll just take an Uber, you know?
Yeah, but it is, like, I mean, for all these things you could take a car to, like I took it to Universal Studios. I took the subway to Universal Studios yesterday from I live in Hollywood here. And it's hugely efficient, but I know there's such a stigma around it. Not a lot of people will do that. Everybody would rather drive the 50-minute drive and sit in the traffic and then park their cars for $20 at Universal Studios or whatever.
Yeah, and that's LA. I don't know. That's LA in two sentences right there. I mean, that's
yeah,
LA.
Drive and park. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Chicago, I had a car, but I was always like, why do I have this stupid fucking car? Because the train system there is fantastic.
Yeah, I grew up in Maryland, D.C., and like the train system over there is great, too. I mean, I was from when I used to live in Maryland and travel to Virginia, you know, just take the subways, you know, the Red Line, and, you know, they're all great. So it's here hopefully, you know, it gets better. But I think that was definitely apparently it was the car industry that did it back in the 50s or something that's what I read. So a homeless guy told me that he was
probably right.
While on the subway,
he was like,
it's so empty. It's so empty because the car industry has got you guys all up there.
Well, he did like, I used to own the rail system in LA, you know, while he was asking for the dollar, you know. So
they're gonna extend it to the airport soon, so that'll be good, because this is gonna be the busiest airport in the world that doesn't have a train system that goes to it.
Yeah,
but
you can get to JFK by train.
Yeah,
but you can't get to LAX.
Yeah, which it's a funny story. One of the first times I went to New York and I had to take, you know, trying to save money, I instead of taking a taxi, I took but I had to leave like at 3 a.m. or 2 a.m. Yeah. So I was staying at my sister, and she lived in Wall Street area. So I took the subway. I remember taking the subway, and it was literally like a zombie movie. I remember going into like some train station, walking the stairs. There was nobody. There was like some guy, like just like some shadow going like, and I'm like, and I get in the subway, and like there's like guys looking at me, and I'm holding my things. I'm going like, okay, as soon as the doors open, I'm gonna jump. I was like, I was so tired. I didn't sleep the whole day. I couldn't sleep. I mean, I was like, I was so like. Finally, I got to like, when you get to that subway that actually gets to the airport, I was like, fuck, I'm free. But I was so fucking scared. I was like, I'm not doing this shit again. I'll pay you know, $20, $30, $40, $50 for it next time. But when you're poor, you gotta do those things, especially when you're starting
no kidding.
The stand up. You know,
yeah, oh man. I'll tell you what else is it, because I took the subway down to Dodger Stadium the other day. I mean, it doesn't go to Dodger Stadium, but I got, you know, off the closest stop and then walked up, which is very enjoyable. But you're walking through that huge parking lot, and I remember thinking, this is such an American stadium because it's got 5 miles of parking lot around it, and you wouldn't see it any, you know, Arsenal Football Club or, you know, any kind of stadiums in Europe and stuff. The parking lots are tiny. Tiny in comparison, and the subway just comes right up to the stadium. So it's very an interesting difference in the culture, you know.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, buddy, you've been an amazing guest, of course, as we knew you would
thanks,
be. We can't thank you enough for hanging. We rifled. There's no planning as well. We just rifled from topic to topic, and I think that's killer.
I love it.
So much fun. We always have, unless Francisco, I mean, I'll throw our general, so buddy, we always have this a final question that we ask of our guests when they're on the way out the door, and not on the way out. Jesus. That's a throwback to you being a grandpa. There we go. We always love to ask you, unless, is this our producer saying that we got a question from somebody? We're wondering, do you have any final piece of travel advice that you'd love to pass on to people? Something that you could have been given yourself, or that you've just discovered as time has gone on? What's your favorite little bit of travel advice to hand on?
Oh, man. Like, so many things. I think the number one thing is you can always buy it there.
Oh,
you know, whatever it is, it's like, oh God, I forgot you can get a fucking toothbrush.
Yeah,
you can get a razor. You can get underwear. You can get socks. You can get shoes, whatever you need that you forgot, you can get it there. So don't, I pack light and check your fucking bag, you jerk.
Yes. I agree with you. I started doing that, and I'm like, it's so much, it's like, you're free. I mean, I was going to give an example of like having a kid and then not have, but that I was like, no, that's not a good example. But I was like, but it is kind of like, once you check the bag, it's like, you're free. You can just walk around. You don't have to carry something heavy. And like, yeah.
And part of that is on the airlines too, because they started charging to check bags. So come to think of it, that's why a lot of people started carrying on. But good God, man.
But it's also like some people just bring like so much shit in there. And you're like,
yeah,
it's like you just came from Ross. What the fuck? You know, it's like,
yeah, don't eat that fucking chicken salad that you bought. If we're not all eating it, don't open it in the plane, because now we're all going to smell it. It's gross.
That's good. That's a triple hitter.
Yeah. Don't bring chicken salad. Check your bag.
I told you I got a million things. I'm like, oh, I fucking yeah. Bring two chargers.
And say that's your stand. If you ever do stand up, that's your 5 minute bits right there.
That'll be my 5 minutes. Yeah, there you go.
Just I'm going off on that shit. But yeah, no, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks,
I know you're really busy,
so
thank you very much.
I know.
Never too busy to hang with a buddy.
You're super busy. There we go. Tweet Pods, one of our regulars is saying thank you. Well, Pam's here too, saying thank you to you, man. And yeah, I know that it's a pleasure seeing you on my screen here. I know you're going to be on my screen here tonight as soon as I turn that TV on.
The power's in your hands, America. Yeah. You can see me tonight on your TV. Just look me up.
And next season too, because your show got renewed, which is awesome.
Right.
So thank you. Yeah. Right. So that's, and also on the Goldbergs as well. And American Crime Story, which you don't know which one it is. So
Stand by.
Literally. Yeah.
Awesome,
so thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Cheers, bro.